Hey there, welcome to our
Live SaaS Academy AMA sessions. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Groups. You'll require buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with awesome experts on specific SaaS related topics to bring more value to the SaaS community and hopefully share some unique knowledge. So today, fascinating hour ahead of us with Anne and Sam. Sam is the host of Breaking B2B podcast. By the way, top 2.5 B2B marketing podcasts out there. Congrats. I want to know how he did it. I need some wisdom on podcasting. We'll talk later. And also the founder at Breaking B2B, B2B SEO and web design for revenue, not vanity. And I also love the messaging here. But and Anne, it's our own SEO lead at SaaS Group, or, you know, we simply call her SEO goddess. So she brings us all the latest trends in SEO and just make sure we're prepared for anything Google has coming our way. Anyway, so I'm really happy to see you guys here. And, you know, before we go any further, we've got tons of questions, but maybe a bit more of your background. Sam, let's start with you.
Yeah, sure thing. Looking forward to the episode and hello to everyone tuning in live. So yeah, Sam Dunning, like you just mentioned, I run a company called Breaking B2B. Essentially work with B2B and SaaS companies to focus on more of a revenue-driven approach to SEO as opposed to focusing on vanity metrics, which I'm sure we'll get into in the next hour or so. And like you mentioned, I also host a podcast called Breaking B2B, where we tend to interview either a B2B marketing leader or a SaaS marketing leader each Monday. And we get to understand their growth levers, what's actually driving growth at their business right now tactically. So if you tune in or watch, you can get a clear takeaway step from each one. And we also do solo episodes there about either SEO or websites or some of my weird, unusual B2B marketing experiments. And if I'm not doing that, I'm probably rambling on about SEO or why SEO isn't there just yet on LinkedIn.
All right. Wonderful. Great to see you here, Anne.
Oh, yeah. I think for the past few years, I've been telling everyone that I've been in SEO for 12 years and I stopped counting after that. But I think it's actually about like almost like 14, more or less now in 2025, like 14 years, always been in SEO from the start. I did a 6-month stint as a social media intern. And then they told me at the agency, like, maybe, have you ever heard of this thing called SEO? Maybe it's more up your alley. And then I had really great mentors in my career. I was really lucky enough with that ever since. And all those years later, I find myself at SaaS Group for the past, like, just over two and a half years almost now, more or less. And yeah, I've been in every space of what you could imagine SEO to be in, and a lot of the phases of SEO. SEO has been dead thousands of times throughout this time as well. And yeah, I've done e-commerce, SEO, enterprise, SaaS, you name it. I've had my stint in it. So that's me.
Perfect. All right. Well, you know, first of all, you just described like pretty much every industry out there, right? And they've all used SEO. But, you know, because I also host a podcast, and sometimes founders still come to the podcast and I ask them, like, what works for you? Like, what kind of, like, strategy you're using? And some still say that SEO is not something they're going for. And it always makes me curious, like, do you actually think that SEO is for everybody, for every company out there? Or, you know, there are certain cases where it doesn't really make sense. Sam, what do you think?
Definitely not. SEO is not a fit for every business, especially in B2B and SaaS. And there's a number of scenarios where it is not a good fit. And that could be, like, one scenario is, let's say you're a SaaS company that's under pressure from VCs, investor companies or similar, and you've got super high growth targets that you need to hit. And they say, look, we need to hit this in the next quarter or so, or something that's very short term. If you start ramping up an SEO program, that's probably not going to yield the results that you want super quick. Although many SaaS clients we work with can see impact within 90 days, we're not doing hard promises. You're going to get X amount of inbound signups, leads, demo requests, book calls, whatever your main conversion point is. So if you're under that kind of investor pressure, you're probably better off trying to scale with paid media. or maybe some outbound, or maybe something that's going to be a lot faster paced. So that's one scenario where SEO is not your best bet. Another might be if you're in a new category or if you're creating a new category. So if you're not, if your offer, if your service, your product is not well known, what do I mean by that? Well, people aren't actually aware that it exists, so they're not searching for it on Google. Google is always best place, or SEO is best place for B2B SaaS as a demand capture channel, i.e. you've got dream clients searching for exactly what you do, how you help, problem you solve, or comparing you to other options on Google. So you can capture that traffic, capture those high intent sales leads, drive them to your website, specific pages, and then convert them with signups, leads, booked calls, whatever it is. Another is if you just don't have resource to make it worthwhile. So if you kind of think, yeah, I'd like to do SEO, but also at the same time, I want to do events, I want to do outbound, I want to do trade shows, I want to do networking, I want to do some different, three different paid media channels, I want to do LinkedIn organic social for founder brand, I want to do a podcast, I want to do webinars. It's like SEO is not even going to get a proper look in. If it's going to be done properly, you need to assign resource in-house, i.e. some content resource, some web resource, and similar, with someone that knows how to drive revenue from SEO. Or you need to get contractors or agencies that have experience and know what they're doing. Whereas if you're just going to give it like a small slice of your time, it's going to be very difficult, and you're probably just not going to chip away at it as much as you like, especially if there's giant competitors in your industry. So that's like three big scenarios where it's a definite no. But happy to share kind of where it does make sense.
Any, what do you think? Maybe any cases to add?
I like to use an analogy for this. Usually it's like very much like when you train for like a marathon. Anyone can really enter the marathon, right? You can, but whether you are going to win or do well in that marathon depends on your fitness level or your preparedness for it, right? So if it's the same like with SEO, if you're just going to have a website that's a one pager, or you're a very new domain where there's no historical signals or anything else, it's going to take you a lot more effort to prepare, to even be, to have the foundations in place to set you up for success in SEO. And those things take time. Whereas if, and that's the same with this analogy, is, as I said, you can enter the race, but if you're not prepared or your fitness level isn't where it's supposed to be, then you will probably not do very well in the race. And if you want to have success, and that success looks like winning the race, then you have to train and be prepared for it. And it's exactly the same with, it's very nuanced and dependent on your particular business or where it's at, and you have to factor in all of those things in your scenario to basically judge your fitness level of being able to adapt SEO or not. So yeah, that's my two cents to it.
Perfect. Thank you. And, you know, also kind of something for me and something that, that I'm trying to understand from time to time a little bit better. You know, something that, that Sam just said, for me, SEO is a bit of a, you know, longer term strategy, right? You start really at the beginning with your journey, with your SaaS, for example, and then you kind of build up. But Sam, to your point that, you know, sometimes you can actually do something to see certain results in 90 days. And, you know, don't we all want some quick wins? So if you could maybe like spill the beans on like what you can do to see the results in 90 days, that would be great.
Yeah. 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 And I can fire up my screen and do a bit of a share on kind of a bit of a process as well.
Sure, absolutely.
In a sec. I suppose what I should say as well, because we've only kind of talked about the negative, but when is SEO a good fit? Because maybe some SaaS founders or SaaS marketers are tuning in and like, it's all doom and gloom. Sam's telling me not to do SEO. SEO died in 1973. I should never do it. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm just trying to set expectations, because a lot of people try and do SEO just like any B2B marketing or SaaS marketing channel. They maybe try and do it in a silo or don't give it the resource it needs. But if your dream clients, if your prospects are actively searching for your offer, your service, your product, or your category or your sector, then it makes sense as long as you can give it the resource that it requires. So whether you do that internally with a team or whether you outsource that, it doesn't matter. But it's like doing that in a strategic manner, which we can kind of go through a bit of this process, and feel free to jump in, Anna and Annie, because some of these might tick off some of the topics we're going to go over, I think. So hopefully everyone can see this, and I'll talk through it as we ramble, as we screen share. So a lot of what I share when it comes to B2B and SaaS SEO is very straightforward. I'm quite a simple guy, so I talk in simple terms. Now, one of the first things that I recommend, like one of the biggest mistakes that I see when I talk to B2B and SaaS companies is maybe they've done SEO before, or they've been trying to do it in-house, or they've contracted with an agency, but they've been caught in something I call the quote-unquote traffic trap. So what do I mean by that? Well, they've been going for high search volume, high traffic volume keywords, but they're more top funnel, they're more informational based. So someone is searching that, not with intent to book a sales call, grab a demo, or sign up to your software. They're searching it just because they're curious or they don't know much about your sector. And those kind of informational keywords might be basic stuff like, what is a KPI? What's a CRM? How to build a website? How to start a SaaS? Something like that. And those can yield tons of traffic. But the thing is, those kind of simple based keywords are going to be wiped out by AI overviews on Google, like the instant results that you get above the fold, which do have some links. But the chances are, even if you do rank a blog post or similar organic position one, someone's probably going to flick onto that page, grab the info they need and bounce off. Or at best, they might check out a lead magnet that you have on the page, or maybe check out some more of your content at best. So instead, I usually recommend flipping that on its head, and rather than going for traffic at all costs, focusing on what is a dream client, an ideal prospect, actually going to search for when they have a good level of intent to either take a demo, take a sign up, or speak to a salesperson around our offering. And that starts with working out what are your money keywords, aka commercial long tail queries that a prospect wouldn't type for fun, but would search when they need the offer. So in the example, if you're watching, in this weird spreadsheet that I've pulled up, is just a quick example that I sometimes share. And this example that I've got is pretending we're in the proposal software space. So you might have heard of brands like Pandadoc, GetAccept, Quilla, Proposify, those kind of tools. There's tons more. Sometimes I do calendar tools, sometimes these, but this is just one example. And what I recommend is the simplest way of identifying your money keywords, so your commercial long tail keywords, is to fire up a Google sheet, fire up an Excel sheet, and build four main columns. There is more in this one, but we can go into that. And those four main columns are what your main offers, like the actual solutions you want to be selling or your products. That's column one. Column two, what are the main industries or niches you serve best? AKA, not just any industries, but industries or niches that have historically bought well into your offer, that have the problem you solve, that are genuinely motivated to solve it, and that have no issue investing in the offer, that aren't strapped for cash. They can afford your offer. It's not a problem for them to spend cash on it. Once you've done that, you also want to do a third column, which is going to be your main competitors. So what are the main competitors that always get brought up on sales calls to a frustrating level? Every time it's these in the top three, four, or five. And then what have we got last? The fourth one is Jobs to be Done. Brilliant, brilliant book or framework called Jobs to be Done by a chap called Bob Moster. There's one other guy, but he's the one I know. Well worth researching. It basically tells us that people don't buy the what, they buy the why. So folks have struggling moments. No one wakes up deciding to spend 10K, 20K, 100K on software. They go through frustrating phases that maybe they're experiencing churn in their organization. Maybe they're struggling, in this case, to close quotes, sales quotes for proposals. Maybe they're not getting the lead to end revenue goals. So they have problems, but various levels of problems, right? Some are minor, some are painfully frustrating, and Jobs to be Done talks about that. So those are the main four columns I suggest you build out: offer, industry, competitors, and Jobs to be Done. And then we can build these out into long tail keywords. So in the proposal example, column one would be, what do folks refer to our software as? And that could be proposal software, proposal tools, proposal platform. And feel free to stop me if I'm kind of going too in depth or too detailed. Column two, industry, could be fintech, sales teams, HR, finance, whatever. Column three, competitors in the proposal space: Pandadoc, GetAccept, Quilla, Proposify, loads of others. Jobs to be Done. And a great way to understand your Jobs to be Done is to either join on sales calls, join prospect calls, or listen to cool recordings using Gong, whatever you use to record sales, Fathom, loads of them. What are those kind of issues that folks might research when they might not even know your software exists? But like I say, you heard me say earlier that top funnel how-to keywords are quite basic, but these are a bit more crisp and specific, like how to write sales proposals that convert or how to close more sales quotes into revenue. Like these kind of keywords are usually less traffic, less volume, but quite more specific. Then once you've done these, we want to make them into long tail keywords. And what you're probably thinking is the first type of keyword you might use in this example, proposal software, might be best proposal software, best proposal tools, best proposal platform. And you might think, well, there's giants showing up for that, Sam, like Proposify, GetPandaDoc. They're going to dominate the top three organic. And it's true. So those are probably keywords that we'll talk about how to build content to rank. But those are probably keywords that are going to be slowly you chip away at those over the months to get those ranking. In the meantime, you want to build kind of longer tail keywords like offer plus industry. So proposal software for sales teams or proposal software for fintech or whatever your main money niches are for sales. And then a really nice tactic that works super well in SaaS is going after competitor alternatives. So you probably know this already, but it's rare that folks hear of your brand for the first time and decide to buy, especially in higher ticket SaaS and B2B in general. People tend to make a short list of vendors, 4 or 5 vendors that they evaluate with their exec team internally before they eventually pull the trigger. So that is why going for search terms like competitor alternatives, competitor pricing, competitor reviews, and those kind of keywords are really effective in SaaS. And they can also get ranked quite quickly because they're not always that high search volume, so they can rank quite fast. So that might be, as a tangible example, PandaDoc alternatives or Get Accept alternatives or Quilla pricing or that kind of stuff. And what I'm encouraging here is basically to make an exhaustive list. So if you can, go through this with your marketing team, with your sales team, so you can basically exhaust all four of these categories and basically get as much info as you can. And then I've talked about 4 columns, but if you want to get a bit more spicy, then you might whack in some middle funnel keywords like checklists, templates, examples, that kind of stuff. Might not be likely to get someone to sign up from it or a demo, but they might download a cheat sheet or a template, and then you can start nurturing them. And you can also look at integrations-based keywords, but that's a bit more advanced. Like that's a really massive strategy that Zapier did back in the day, and they're like 8 million plus traffic now. So we'll stick to those 4 for now. And the whole thing that you do here is you work out what are your long-tail money keywords that you can make out of these 4 categories. Like, for example, best proposal software for sales teams. You might want to check them in a keyword tool like Ahrefs or SEMrush just to check they've got a little bit of search volume. But don't be too put off if it's quite low, because generally the more higher buying intent, high commercial value, usually the lower the search volume is. And that's kind of a good thing, because we don't want tons of traffic. We want prospects that are more likely to convert when they hit our pages. So that's the first step of kind of building out the money keywords. I will take a pause there before we kind of discuss building content and other stuff.
Awesome. That was quite a breakdown. Thank you so much, Sam. Any other tips? Like, what do you do for like quicker results?
Yeah, we actually have a very similar workflow that we apply. I would just add on to that that the worst scenario you could be in is when you are generating loads of traffic to your website and then people go onto your website and they have nowhere to go, or the correct information isn't there that they're expecting. So as Sam said, the best is always to start with these types of transactional money focused keywords or targeting, where you fill up your comparison pages, your jobs to be done, product led kind of tutorials or posts, and your integrations pages. That's typical to SaaS as well. All those kinds of pages you build out first. And then once you've got your bottom funnel kind of like sorted, then you should start thinking about traffic generation again, but not the other way around, because you will get, like, if you are practicing and just implementing, focusing on your money keywords, depending on your industry, you might have a very big list of search terms you could go after. And in some cases, you only have 10. So it really is going to depend on your industry you're in. And you should exhaust that and then move on to focus on going a bit broader. Still very relevant though to your product or to your audience, but then you can go broader. So otherwise you'll hit a plateau where you're just generating, you're not seeing growth in terms of your signups or your conversions after a while, because you filled up all the gaps. So unless you are in a situation where you are frequently launching new product features, you will be stuck and kind of like seeing the same amount of conversions more or less on a monthly basis. Maybe in some cases you have a really expensive software and having the same kind of amount of conversions is totally fine and you don't need that much growth. You need one or two more sales to really make a difference in your revenue. But in most cases it's subscription based. It's not really the case where all software is enterprise necessarily. So really depends on all of those factors as well in terms of your tactic that you would then go and implement. Also, another thing you could do, just to add a tip onto what Sam mentioned regarding the comparison pages or the alternatives, like if you've got PandaDocs alternative or something, you can go, if you're lucky enough where you are in an industry, not maybe lucky enough, but where you've got more competitors that have the brands have your competitive higher search volume, you could also do comparisons of those two competitors and then present yourself as an alternative third solution. So instead of just having PandaDoc alternative, which you can create all those kinds of pages, you can also do PandaDoc plus then the other brand and then compare them and then introduce yourself as the third, because there are often people searching for the most popular brands and comparing them already. So that's just another page tab that you could create.
Yeah, it's a good ad versus pages, and then positioning your offer as the third solution is, or the fourth solution is smart for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you see? Like, I'm sure both of you have seen so many cases. Like, Anay, you go through a few due diligences a month, I guess, and you know we add brands all the time. So you see what companies and founders are doing. What are the kind of the common mistakes? What are the things that the people still keep doing wrong? And where, you know, again, there could be a quick win and quick, you know, fix.
Yeah.
And I want to start here.
Yeah, I've got two things here. One thing, and it's related. So chopping up SEO into small pieces and redistributing that to different people in the team. That is, it's okay to split tasks between, like in a team, or to distribute it, but you should still have someone that is overlooking or overseeing the whole strategy of it and keeping a bigger eye on everything. For example, I often see situations where brands split too much of SEO tasks into like to the different kinds of teams. And then what happens is a common thing that would happen, for example, would be cannibalization. Like that's a very, very common thing that we fix a lot. Like when we do audits, it's a very common error that we find usually with any new brands. So yeah, that I would say is one. If you could imagine, like if you were in an orchestra and everyone's doing their best to play their instrument like the best way possible, but they're not looking at the conductor at all, then even though they're playing their instrument perfectly, the song itself might not come across very well because there's not one person cohesively making sure that all the efforts are making sense together. And that's a very, very common issue that I usually see.
Sam, what about you?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Oh, we've got tons. So yeah, I mean, there's loads with SaaS websites. Like for example, one is SaaS sites are notoriously bad, and so are B2B at being thin on content. So quite often everyone loves the idea of scaling their organic traffic, their leads and their revenue. But so many sites just start off with very low content count. They might not even have a proper blog article section set up on their website. They've probably just got homepage, product, results, book a demo, or book a sign up, whatever. So that's one issue. I mean, you need to scale out content properly. So after you've done that kind of money keyword exercise, you need to start then evaluating what type of content ranks. And we can even walk through that in a bit if you like, how to, I've got a bit of a strategy called blow out the water strategy, where you can kind of evaluate what's ranking and look for insights and gaps in the page to build it. So that's one. We've talked about high volume traffic and getting caught in the traffic trap. Seeing SEO as a tick box exercise, we talked about a little bit. So that's basically where a founder or a marketing leader kind of says, look, there's competitors constantly ahead of us in organic search results. We need to do something about it. But their marketing leader has already got 100 other jobs to do for the week. And they say, can we do some SEO? And the marketing leader's like, yeah, we can try. I mean, I've got 99 other tasks this week, but I'll give it a go. So they go onto a tool like, I don't know, they find a long tail keyword, which might be a top funnel one, like how to do something or something super basic. They chuck it into ChatGPT, generate an article, make a few tweaks, publish it on the website, leave it there after it's published, then get back to their 99 other tasks for the week. And then 3 months go by, the marketing leader or the founder say, look, how are we getting on with our SEO? They said, great, I did what you needed to. I quote unquote did some SEO. I published a page. And they say, great, how many leads did it generate? And the marketing person will say, well, none. You didn't tell me to do SEO to generate leads. You just told me to do some SEO, which I did. I think that's where it goes wrong. It just lacks the strategy, which touches on to what Anne said, kind of when there's too many cooks involved and there's not a clear process, it just kind of becomes a mess. Other issues is kind of not a healthy budget assigned to SEO. SEO still to this day, unless the marketing team or the founder have previously worked in SEO, I found, I see SEO budgets get like 2K a month and I see ad budgets get 100K a month. Like it's always been the way, unless leadership have done SEO before, sadly. Exec team not bought in, we've kind of talked about pressure from investors, we talked about, and then wasting time or budget on technical BS. So I think technical SEO is important when you've got a larger site. So if your website's got hundreds and hundreds or thousands of pages, then you can acquire something called technical debt. Pages slow down, the structure becomes poor, the navigation becomes poor, it harms the user experience and more. But many SaaS and B2B websites are that very light on content. So something I see which is wastes a lot of cash and resource and time is when SaaS companies employ an agency or contractor and they'll spend months doing technical audits on sites that have got like 50 pages. And it's like, this is a complete waste of time. Your time would be so much better spent if you could identify what your money keywords are for the bottom of funnel, mid funnel, top funnel, build out a content calendar, so map out what can we do realistically in-house to build out pages that are going to rank, resonate, and convert our dream clients? What's a realistic weekly and monthly cadence to publish this content as quickly as possible, whether we do it in-house or externally? Your budget's way better spent doing that than messing around with image alt tags. So that's just hard facts. And I completely agree, once you get to kind of large scale, more enterprise, mid-market websites, technical SEO is important. But there's basic technical SEO, like just making sure that the metadata is right, making sure the URL is on point with the keyword, making sure your H1 and the rest of your heading tags are sorted out, sorting some internal links, which we can talk about, and the rest of it is not that important, in my opinion.
All right. Thank you for elaborating. One more question that I have, because, you know, lately, I guess after the New Year's, content marketers, I don't know what their role is, but my email got bombarded with, I don't know, hundreds of emails saying, let's build backlinks. And I'm like, okay, well, let's, but who are you? Like, does it make sense? Does it make sense to do it with you? Would Google then be angry at us for doing like just some kind of like SEO for SEO anyway? So I'm curious, like, does it work? Like, I mean, I guess there are so many people doing this for a reason, right? So does it help if you're a founder or just getting into SEO? Should you respond to those hundreds of emails and say yes and just kind of get your information on every website in the world, or it's not a good practice? Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Get that Forbes link for 20 cents or $5. It's definitely 100% legit. No, jokes aside, it's so you can rank without backlinks for sure. And usually the more niche and specific you get with the content that you're putting out, and quite often that relates to lower search volume. So, for example, if there was maybe a new competitor on the market and you tried to rank for that company name alternative or pricing or something like that, and it was really low search volume, and you could probably just build out a really useful, helpful, educational piece of content that positions your product as the solution and probably get it ranking. Whereas if we go to search terms, like back when I was talking about proposal software at the start of this webinar, like best proposal software or best proposal platforms, you've got no chance in hell of ranking that like without links as a relatively low authoritative site. So that's where you can build the best in class page to rank, which is probably in that case going to be a listicle, like the top 20 solutions of 2025 for proposal software, but it ain't going to rank without backlinks. That's why you need to build up that authority. That's where they really kick in for those kind of competitive to rank keywords. So they are important, but to your point, they especially now, so more than ever, need to be relevant to your niche. So you can't just grab a load of links from any Tom, Dick, or Harry that's kind of offering you on cold email outreach. Not to say some might be legit. So some might be genuinely good partners that are in a site that's relevant to your industry. So if a prospect went onto that site, they might actually think, oh yeah, it's somewhat related. Whereas if you're trying to grab links with anywhere, that's where it can do you more harm than good. So there is a play, and happy to share like a bunch of free ways that you can build links with partners and stuff in a sec, but I'll let Anne chime in.
Yeah, I remember we talked about building backlinks with Anne just when I joined. It was like, I think the first or the second month. And I feel like everything I know about backlinks is from you. So please share more.
We had a brand last year who has gone through the process of where they've done all of their, like the pages that Sam was speaking about, like all their money pages, all the comparison pages, industry pages, whatnot. They built out all of that. And then they started even with like their broader content marketing initiative as well. And they are in a very, very competitive space. So they didn't do any backlink before. And then they started doing it, like there was a proper strategy put behind it, and then it was done. And it made all the difference in terms of their performance, and not just the rankings, but their traffic acquisition. And because of all of their money pages being in place, it had an impact on the bottom line and the conversions as well. If you're going to do backlinks and these things are not in place, you will be wasting time, effort, and money. So there has to be strategy behind it. And it's to your previous question regarding technical SEO, I just wanted to tie it in to this as well. I don't usually see SEO as siloed into different categories. You have to do the SEO that makes the most sense for that brand, whether it's a technical offsite, onsite. Typically on LinkedIn, you always see the arguments of where people would say like, no, you should do onsite only, or you should do offsite only, or technical SEO. Those arguments come originally from a place where agencies would try to sell the services that they offer only, and what they specialize in. But SEO now more than ever has become super nuanced. So you should really just do what makes the most sense and apply those tactics to your specific brand and your resources, as Sam also said earlier, that's available to you. If you are in a very competitive space and you have a limited budget, your strategy would look different to someone who is also in a competitive space but has a decent budget. Or a bigger budget, and it you kind of have to apply or be very creative, and if you don't have the budget necessarily, so it's not a one size fits all solution at all, and it all makes difference. And I know that Sam has some cool like tips regarding backlinks, so I'll just hand over back to him.
Yeah, sure. So yeah. So you nailed it, Anna. It's like get the infrastructure right. Get those money pages up and then work out what's struggling to rank, like what's lagging behind on page two, even though we've built, or bottom of page one, even though we've built a really best in class page. And that's where you kind of work out where might we be falling short, where might we need to build some decent links. So I guess there's a few ways that have worked for us over the years that we do ourselves and clients and similar. One of my favorite low lift ways is actually working out who on your team, who in your company tends to do the most press, like who tends to go on podcast interviews or do PR stuff or get interviewed on articles, that kind of stuff. Is it your founder? Is it your marketing leader? Is it your revenue leader? Who is it? Grab their LinkedIn profile URL, just copy and paste it into Hrefs or SEMrush, click the backlinks tab, and you can look at all the page sources that have linked to them in the past. And the beauty of this is if they have done quite a bit of press or podcast interviews, whatever it is in the past, you'll see all the pages that come up. Look for the ones with, I don't know, half decent domain rating or domain authority, like 40 plus, and look for the ones that are actually relevant to your industry and niche. Find those articles, because the chances are they've probably just linked to their LinkedIn profile as opposed to the focus keyword and page that you want a do follow link to. And then you've already got the reputation there because they've linked to you previously. Find out who the author of the post was and just drop them a message on LinkedIn. Or if you're not in B2B, then it might be another channel. And just say, look, thanks again for featuring our founder or our exec or whoever it was. So I was wondering if you could swap this link for kind of this main keyword that we're focusing on with the do follow link to this page. Really quick, really low lift, easy. That's what I've done historically. That works quite well. My next favorite one that won't cost you a dime as well is building partners. So partnerships, most SaaS marketers or founders will know this anyway, like really, really, really powerful. And the best way to do it, I've found, is find companies that serve the same ICP, the same ideal client profile as you, but are not direct competitors. So I'll give you an example. I run a B2B and SaaS SEO agency. So we're serving like marketing leaders at these kind of companies. But one of my friends that I met on LinkedIn, a guy called Justin Rowe, runs a company called Impactable LinkedIn Ads Agency. So he only does LinkedIn Ads his team. So he's not a direct competitor, but he's serving the same ICP. So I just messaged him one day on LinkedIn and said, hey, Justin, I've got a weird idea to create some content together and kind of ramp it up each other's website traffic and leads. Like, are you against having a conversation? When it comes to outreach, I'm a big fan of painfully short messages. Open the curiosity gap. So rather than doing like your typical outreach that you get on email, like you said, for backlinks, that's like 10 paragraphs and I can't even be bothered to read that because it's so long. Something super short that builds up their curiosity. And then most of the time, people will message me back if I send something like that, like, what the heck are you on about, Sam? Like, what are you talking about? But tell me more. And then I'm a big fan of, if you're going to bother to do outreach, just put a little bit more effort in than anyone else would. So I would probably jump onto Loom or Vidyard, record a quick video, jump on their website and say, look, this is my idea. Like, I'm actually happy to build out a guest article on your website. Talk about this topic I think could be useful for both our audiences. All I'd ask for return was a link back to this page. Percent of the people you ask it are probably going to say yes, because it's in their benefit. They're actually going to get more traffic, relevant traffic from it, and a link back. And it opens the door for more business. Like, for example, in that example I've just given, we now send referrals each other's way. We've done podcasts together. We've done webinars together. We do articles together. We do content together. So it's not just good for, but it's good for business. So that's a good one. And then the last one, probably one of my favorites again, is guesting on podcasts. So one of the best sites for this is a site called Listen Notes. I used to use a site called Chartable, but it's gone down. Well, it's going down. But yeah, listennotes.com, really good. You can literally type in your industry or your niche. So in my case, SaaS marketing or B2B marketing. You can look at the top part in your industry. Yours might be fintech, accounting, whatever niche you serve. And then it even tells you the host. It tells you what top percentage their podcast is. And then you can make a list of those, reach out to, I don't know, 5 a week. Most of those are going to be on LinkedIn, right? And do that tactic I just told you, like do a painfully short message like, hey, Steve, or hey, Janice, enjoyed your recent episode on XYZ, had a weird idea for your next show. Are you opposed to having a conversation? And again, most people accept that request because it's just weird. And then send them a Loom video with your unusual ideas. And then a good percentage of those will have you on. Do a great episode on their podcast. When they publish the article, ask for a backlink back to your focus page. But not only do you get that, you're going to build your audience from folks listening to the podcast, and you might get leads from that as well as kind of getting the SEO juice from the article or the podcast published page. So those are a few of the ones that work quite well for us.
Thank you. And, you know, I can totally back up at least the last two. So first of all, yes, be authentic and like do a little work. Like I got a message yesterday, and maybe he's listening to us now. But anyway, this person sent me a message on LinkedIn, and he's in content SEO. And it started as, you know, your typical LinkedIn message, like, oh, I can see we're both interested. And I'm like, don't say SEO, don't say SEO. And it was in running. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet. So I am a runner. And he saw my post, he scrolled down, he read, you know, and it was relevant for him. And I was like, oh, thank God, like, it's not SEO, because it would be hard, no. But sorry, Anne, but that's why I'm so glad we have you. But the second one about podcast, I had a podcast with Craig, the founder of Castros, this podcast hosting platform, and he called it a video first approach to content, where, you know, you do the podcast, it's a video that just lives there, and then it's audio, and then it's like you said, it's a transcript, it's, you know, potential to get links, potential to get in a newsletter, and then a LinkedIn post and whatnot. So it all kind of grows from there. So it's it's great. It works, and it's something that we do as well. Okay, well, I have another question that I cannot not ask, because it's been everywhere since ChatGPT is there, since we realized that we do appear in ChatGPT and Perplexity and whatnot. Yeah, any ways, any tips from you guys how to rank there? I don't know how to even appear there, how to make sure, you know, we recently asked Perplexity for a list of serial acquirers, and it said, yeah, there are serial acquirers, Saas Group, Berkshire Hathaway, and Constellation Software, and we were first. And I'm like, well, you know, for a reason. But actually, we don't know why, like, why are we first? We, like, this is all magic to me. Any tips how to consciously do this, Sam?
Yeah, I can start this. I'm by no means an expert in AI search. I can only share what's worked so far for our clients and what's worked for ranking some of our pages and from some of the research we've done. So a lot of it seems to be general SEO good practice, and things like writing articles or landing pages, competitor pages, in a conversational tone, in a conversational manner. So rather than pulling stuff from AI engines itself, actually writing using voice of customer research, speaking to real pain points, speaking to your clients' goals, their objectives, and their jobs to be done, working to one of Google's frameworks, EEAT, experience, expertise, authority, trust. So you're writing at, for example, if you've got a how-to page, like top funnel, you're actually saying, we know your problem, we know this is the impact of the problem, here's how our product specifically fixes it, here's some trust signals with social proof results, reviews, etc., and here's a CTA to take the next step. So that's one basic thing. Another thing that seems to work quite well is embedding rich media. So like weaving in YouTube videos, which are kind of relevant topics on the page that you're building out. That's not just good for AI, that's really good for YouTube as well. I mean, really good rather for Google results, as you can get ranked in the video sections and even get up to four kind of rankings for one keyword topic. Another thing we're doing is on articles. Like, it doesn't matter if they're like comparisons or how-tos or best listicles or that kind of stuff, is doing a quick section at the top of the article, why you should trust us, just a paragraph, and then a quick summary of the article, just to kind of try and get picked up either in the AI overview or in the quick snippet that ChatGPT search and that kind of stuff does. One other thing we're seeing is well-structured titles, so clear H1 and then clear H2, and the rest of your page is well broken up, easy to consume by both AI engines and prospects. And aside from that, the only other signal that comes to mind that I can remember is, again, backlinks seem to play an importance, but niche relevant ones. So again, making sure that you're collecting industry important backlinks, and trust signals, so brand mentions. So not necessarily just folks linking to your site, but your company being mentioned naturally on other sites, whether that's PR sites, industry relevant sites, and that kind of stuff. That all seems to be working at the moment.
All right. So, just to add to that, because it was kind of, you know, bothering me a little, like those results that you get in Perplexity, ChatGPT, and like, you know, Saas Group appearing before Constellation Software. Thank you very much. But like, does it happen because, you know, we're doing such a good job, or is it because, you know, it's my profile,
it's Anna at Sata Group. And, you know, it's kind of the also the historical information that I put there. And it's because I ask about Sata Group so much, like, does it affect it? Could it be just, you know, kind of playing on my vanity? Or it's something legit that I can trust? What do you think?
So for example, I've got a ChatGPT account that I use quite often. I've trained it over time to refer to certain things, and it's become quite sassy. So sometimes if I mention something, then it says, well, you can use your SEO skills to do, and as part of the answer, because it now knows that I've got SEO skills. It was part of data that I like trained or saved it on. And so I do believe that there's some sort of personalization depending on the information it knows about some of the prompts that you've done before within the platform. So that is definitely, I would say it does play a role. The best guess that you would have to know is if you can't control how every person is going to personalize. So the best you can do is try to have just a general plan and go with that. As Sam already covered, so for example, all the on-site recommendations that he said now, something just to add on to that is technical SEO, actually, in this case, a lot of the crawlers from the AI tools has a very hard time understanding JavaScript. So then because of that, you have to make sure, again, like, and this is just even with normal SEO work, you make sure that your content is crawlable and that it's easy for the crawler to retrieve the information from the page. And then you don't have control over the source that it's going to cite in the answer. So your best is to, if you're in a specific industry, because there's some sort of like at least patterns with this that you can go try and detect. Like if you go onto ChatGPT and you're searching, let's say CRM, and you're searching some queries or questions on CRM, you can kind of see a pattern of who they're citing. And that, for example, you can make sure that you appear on those publications with branded mentions, as Sam mentioned. And it's important to also check the logs of these platforms, like when last their data has been updated, because, I mean, if you're going to put in your brand mention now and the last update was in 2023, then most likely maybe your content will not show or surface in that sense. So this year, my advice to everyone just doing SEO is this year is your year of experimentation. And we have no choice. You have to just go through it, because if you don't, then you'll fall behind and you won't know what's going to work for your brand and your specific situation. So it is important to measure and test and experiment, and also just to know when to stop the experiment and know when to move on as well.
So we get one more question about AI, actually. Can AI truly automate your SEO game? What do you think? Quick wins, like all those super posts on LinkedIn?
You want to go,
Sam? Yeah, I'll go. I mean, I'm probably as anti-AI as most could get. Now, I think it definitely has a place, but because I deal a lot with B2B SaaS that are selling high-ticket solutions, like to mid-market and enterprise, like just put yourself, like you said, there's so many LinkedIn posts where folks say, generate all your articles, 100 articles in 5 seconds with this AI script. And I just facepalm, because I'm thinking, if I'm a prospect that's looking to get 100K plus software and I'm evaluating vendors and I land on a page that says, turbocharge your revenue instantly with our all-in-one, all-singing revenue generating platform, I'm going to bounce off that page quicker than ever, because it talks like a robot and sounds like a robot. Whereas the best content is not just built for SEO, it's built for the end prospect. And you can't build content that both ranks, resonates, build trust with, and converts clients unless you do proper customer research, i.e. you interview prospects that you recently won, you recently lost, you recently closed, to understand their pain points, why they chose you, their concerns, their objections, why the end result they decided to part their cash with you, and all that good stuff. So important. And most of the time, these AI quick scripts aren't doing that, certainly from the content standpoint. So I think you can do frameworks with AI. So you can build out, you could you could script an AI engine to build out a format for a page, i.e. can you do the rough structure, like what should be the rough heading title, what should be the rough metadata and the main structure of this article, this landing page. Fine, use it to speed up that workflow. Maybe use it to help you structure some URLs and do kind of some of the more grunt work. But when it comes to content, I'm still 100% back it by customer research, get the subject matter expertise behind it, because unless I'm selling something super low ticket, if someone sees lands on a page and just they're going to work out within 5 seconds. It's like with the AI post on LinkedIn when they've got all these crazy emojis and they start using like super long words full of jargon that you'd never use in a normal conversation. You can just tell it was written by a robot. And in 4 or 5 years time, that's probably all going to change. But where we're at now for content writing, I'm pretty against it. But for speeding up workflows, I think it's great.
Okay, what's your take on this?
We started in our SEO team. We started with a framework where we've listed all like the jobs we wish, for example, that we want to automate and or streamline. And then we started testing all of them. And as you build those solutions or you test it, you realize exactly what you can safely automate and which ones you cannot, or where there's nuances to. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it does not. So we've got this little risk index with it, and we are clear on, as we are going through it, we are very clear on exactly like what tasks we can automate and where, up to what point you should automate, and then leave it to a person to do the rest. Maybe in the future, as Sam said, that would change and we would have better options and you could automate a lot more. But there are definite instances where you shouldn't be fully automating something. What I'm seeing that is quite dangerous, that I would advise or warn against for any like SaaS owner, is there's loads of people now selling automations as like on Gumroad, for example, where they've built something with Make and they're selling like automated SEO solutions. But again, that person that's selling it, make sure that they are true like SEO specialists, because you might have the best intentions of like automating something and you are thinking like, this is so cool, I'm going to automate this, but you're actually hurting a different part of your website. You have to think about all the ranking factors and the bigger, again, it comes back to thinking about the bigger picture and not chopping up SEO into small pieces, because you can actually hurt your website more than, so yeah. We actually, we built these three utility tools for one of our brands yesterday. We built 5 tools in 2 hours using AI, and we wouldn't have been able to do that a year or two ago. We would have to book it in, wait for DevOps, wait for developers to do the rest of it. We were able to do that with Canvas, with ChatGPT Canvas, and we built that out. And yeah, so again, in some instances, it's absolutely perfect, but it requires testing and making sure the output is trustworthy and it would have success like most of the time.
Sam, I think you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I'm just like, my main thing is SEO shouldn't be in a silo. SEO works best, especially with SaaS, when it's part of an ecosystem. Something kind of a lot of smart B2B marketers and founders are talking about now is kind of treating your marketing landscape as an ecosystem. So it's rare, for example, that someone search, especially if you're a high ticket ACV SaaS, that someone searches something once, like best proposal software, lands on your article, takes a demo and buys. Just doesn't happen like that. They might see your page, then they might take a demo, but then they might discuss it with their exec team on Slack. Then they might check out your podcast or check out your YouTube channel. Then they might forget about it for a few months. Then they might see your ad on LinkedIn. Then they might go, oh yeah, I remember, I need to get that. Go back into your website. Then they might forget about it. Then someone else on their exec team checks out your YouTube. Then someone signs up to your email list. Then they grab the lead magnet. Then they go back to the newsletter. Then they go back to Google. Then they compare you to alternatives. And eventually they book a demo and buy. So B2B buying is messy as anything. It is not one route. SEO is part of the marketing ecosystem, but it's not all be an end all. It can be great at demand capture, but it can also be great at building mind share. I mean, you know the rule 95-5, only 5% of your market, total addressable market, are in market to buy at any time. So what are we doing about the other 95%? SEO is going to be great to capture that 5%, but it should also build mind share and awareness for those other 95%, which feeds into your other B2B marketing ecosystem. And the other thing is, with SEO gimmicks, thinking about traffic at all costs and doing all these AI crazy tools, yeah, they sound great on paper because we're going to 10x or 20x our traffic, but what impact is that going to have for a potential prospect? Like I say, a lot of these cheap tricks will harm your brand. They'll piss off prospects that land on your website if they see a load of junk on the page, which again is harmful for your reputation, and they're probably going to tell their friends. And it also, if you're doing it to your detriment, it could perhaps even implement a penalty. Like Anna said, if you're doing some dodgy tactics, like you never know what Google's going to do. So it's, yeah, cheap like tricks rarely work.
It's like the programmatic trend from a few years back where everyone, I feel like, was trying to build pages programmatically. And in certain cases, it works perfectly, but it's very specific to your to a use case. And you have to have a proper search angle for it to make sense to your, it has to make sense to your audience and tied to your product. And there were loads of websites with programmatic pages. It was too broad or just didn't have any specific angle to it or strategy. And it ended up hurting so many websites because of that, instead of actually providing any value. And it's the same with AI. If you are able to find, whether you're building a free tool or an app or an additional lead gen, subdomain or whatever you're doing, it has to make sense for your audience and it has to add value at the end of the day, as Sam said.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for your answers. All right, we have a couple more minutes and, you know, just a couple, I think, quick and easy questions. One is from the audience. And I would like to know if SEO is best for those who have a strong background in IT or marketing, or it can be learned and executed by people who are not in both of those areas. What do you think? If you're just kind of want to break into SEO.
Yeah, I think it can be learned by a layman for sure. Like, I am not technical at all. Like, my background was retail and then sales and then eventually marketing. So, but you'll probably notice from the way I describe SEO that I'm more of strategic and a content standpoint. I'm not a strong technical SEO, but for a lot of the projects we work on, I'll either hand that off to a developer when it's needed. So I think a lot of this stuff that we've walked through can be learned. Like, there's so many useful YouTube channels, audiobooks, podcasts, but the best way to do it is to experiment hands-on. There's no better way to learn than to actually do something yourself. Doesn't matter if it's SEO, starting your own podcast, building a blog, whatever, posting on LinkedIn. There's no better way to do than learn the basics and then actually get stuck in. So whether that is doing some stuff on your own website, building out a blog, or starting your own site and trying to rank for some niche long tail keywords and that kind of stuff, that's one of the best ways. And you can't go that far wrong, really. Like, if you just, there's so many useful resources like the Ahrefs blog and stuff like that, where you can get so many easy tips and just start doing it. Because if an idiot like myself can do it, then pretty much anyone can.
And Nay, what do you think?
Well, just from over the years of like training people in the space, I find that usually people that have been web developers, as an example, when they adapt, or they tend to pick it up really fast. And especially if they were also business orientated, SEO is interesting because you kind of have to, you don't need to be able to code from scratch, or it's really not needed to do all that, especially these days. I said, like, you've got so many aids now with all the AI tools, so it really is not necessary, but it does help you a lot if you're able to understand your way around being able to do that and not having to rely on a web developer to outsource implementation, for example, because they tend to have a very busy schedule and then you kind of have to wait for that implementation. So if you can do it yourself, it's just more efficient. But it's very rare to find, I find, like, developers that are very business oriented as well. So it's maybe people in product is also a good option of learning SEO. So people that have a combination, I find, with some technical ability or know-how, and then combining that with business orientation or being business or entrepreneurial, tends to be a good combination. Funny enough, though, throughout the years, the people that have fallen into SEO the most that I've met have financial, like, degrees in finance. Like, a lot of people have accounting or financial management as a background, and they ended up hating their degree and they didn't go and work in that degree. They ended up getting into SEO somehow, but they tend to do really well. And maybe it is that application of logic that you need in that, plus the or business orientation part of it that serves them pretty well. But that's usually what I find works pretty, or yeah, the people that pick it up the fastest.
Great. So to your point, Sam, like there are so many, you know, wonderful materials and resources to look at if you want to break into it or stay on top of this. Let's make it our hack. Like, what is your go-to place, favorite resource, podcast, whatever, that keeps you kind of sharp on the trends and what's going on and the latest changes, whatever, something that you, something that works for you?
Yeah, most of the stuff I tune into is actually outside of SEO, because I find SEOs are too biased or too deep on technical, which kind of sends me to sleep. So I listen to a lot of unusual B2B marketing stuff. I do tune into SEO stuff to keep up to date, like was there Rusty Brick with Barry Shorts, there's ClearScope that do some good webinars, Hrefs blogs, and a lot of folks I follow on LinkedIn, so I check out that kind of stuff. But then I interview marketing leaders all the time to find out what's working around SaaS marketing on my show, Breaking B2B. Then I tune into podcasts like, what do I tune into? A great show called Everybody Hates Marketers by Louis Grenier. I tune into all kinds of unusual B2B shows because SEO, like you said, like it depends what angle you're hitting it with. Like it depends, is someone talking about they want to do SEO themselves to just learn it as a skill? Fine, do that and kind of experiment on the side. Are you trying to pick it up for your organization? Because if you're working in a mid-market or enterprise company, SEO is more about people management than it is about actually getting stuff done, because your most difficult task is to actually get the job done, i.e. agree a deliverable, agree an asset, and then get it published on the website. And that can be very difficult in bigger companies. So actually, like Anna said, that's not always the easiest for folks that are maybe more technical and not used to dealing with managers and all that kind of stuff, internal politics, which is a completely different ballgame. So I think it's useful in SaaS marketing and B2B marketing to have a holistic idea of the market and to understand things like buyer psychology, how to do customer research, how to run sales calls, understanding different sales motions like sales-led, marketing-led, product-led, building a wider knowledge of things outside of SEO to really understand your focus clients and how people actually work and program outside of SEO. Yes, learn the basics of SEO, but also learn a lot of stuff outside that, which is what I tend to do.
That's a great advice. Anne?
Like from, it was a podcast I think you had recently or an AMA with our own Shannon Vettis, where she mentioned or gave really good advice where she said, know your audience. And ironically, as marketers, you obviously focus on the client's target audience, but you don't think about your own sometimes, which in this case would be your client. So, and you'd have to judge how would you get the best impact or how could you have the best influence to get your work implemented? And that's part of being a good SEO specialist, is knowing when to push and when to pull, I guess, and being able to delegate all of that. Because at the end of the day, implementation gets results. And without implementation, you just have a bunch of audits and reports. So, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And yeah, thank you. I'm sorry we went a little bit overboard with time, but it was great listening to you and learning all about SEO. I mean, like I said, every time we talk with Anne, it's just a bunch of new ideas and things to work on and implement. So Sam, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. You've got great thing going on, and you know, hopefully we'll get to your podcast too, maybe with Anne. Yeah, thanks so much for your time, guys. It's been a great pleasure hosting you.
Enjoyed it. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.